Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, text Karma Yoga, Action, Krishna Consciousness, text number 21. Maya Sparshe Svasaktatma Vindatyatmani Yatsukam Sabrahma Yoga Yuktatma Sukham Akshayam Ashnute Bhayasparsheshu, in external sense pleasure. Asakta Atma, one who's not attached. Vindati, enjoys. Atmani, in the self. Yat, that which. Sukham, happiness. Saha, he. Brahma Yoga, by concentration in Brahman. Yukta Atma, self-connected. Sukham, happiness. Akshayam, unlimited. Ashnute, enjoys. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always entranced, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. Prabhupada, Sri Jamunacharya, great devotee in Krishna consciousness, said, Yadavadi mama cheta Krishna padaravinde navanavarasa daman yud yatam rantima sit tadavadi batanari sangame smarimane bhavati muka vikara shustu nishtivanam cha. Since I've been engaged in the transcendent loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl with distaste. Person in Brahma Yoga or Krishna consciousness is so absorbed in the loving service of the Lord that he has lost his taste for material sense pleasure altogether. The highest pleasure in terms of matter is sex pleasure. The whole world is moving under its spell, and a materialist cannot work at all without this motivation. But a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with greater vigor without sex pleasure, which he avoids. This is the test in spiritual realization. Spiritual realization and sex pleasure go ill together. A Krishna conscious person is not attracted to any kind of sense pleasure due to his being a liberated soul. Vaya sparsheshvasaktatma vindatyatmani yasukam sabrahma yoga yuktatma sukam akshayam ashnute. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always entranced, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. The idea is if we actually became conscious of Krishna, then we'd actually be conscious of unlimited pleasure. Or as much as we're able to become conscious of Krishna, to that extent, we can understand what transcendental happiness actually is. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Vishayava nivartante niraharasya dehinam rasavardham rasopyasya param drishva nivartate. That the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, then he becomes fixed in knowledge or in consciousness. In other words, that's what we're looking for, is to get a higher taste in Krishna consciousness. That will attract us to get more of a taste, more of a higher and higher taste. That way we can make progress. If we're experiencing the same thing day in and day out, then it gets boring. And if it gets boring, then we'll give it up after some time. Anything that doesn't give us pleasure, we give up. Just like nowadays, people are interested in getting as much sex pleasure as possible. So even they get married, they just, one, the husband or wife just chew each other until there's no taste left. And then they spit each other out. It's like chewing gum. If you have chewing gum, there's some sugar in it. But if you chew it long enough, there's no more sugar. And you're just working your jaw. And then after some time, you'll just spit the chewing gum out. So people in the material world nowadays, they think that the aim of life is just to gratify their senses. Chintyam apareyam cha pralayantam upashitya kama paboga paramam etavam iti nischita. They believe that to gratify the senses unto the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization. And therefore there's no measurement for their anxiety. So believing that the aim of life is just to gratify one's senses, everything one does is just to gratify one's senses. And therefore, even marriage life, where there's some opportunity for sex life, of course nowadays people don't even bother getting married. Or if they do, it's just, they don't really expect it to last very long. Or as I tell the story, that one devotee, she was married for something like 20 years and she had 3 children. And one day she went to her mother and said, because they were living together, they weren't married. And so she went to her mother, this devotee lady, and said, "Mom, I think me and this boy are going to get married." And the mother said, took her hand and said, "Are you sure he's the right man?" So people don't take marriage very, generally they don't take marriage very seriously. And it's just, it's a contract. In Kali Yuga it becomes a contract simply to enjoy sex pleasure for some time. And then after you get bored, then you go find someone else. Because there's no higher conception. Now, sadhana bhakti, we have the conception, but we also have to get the experience. And there are three levels of transcendental pleasure. There's 3 levels of devotional service called sadhana, bhava, and prema. Somehow or another, Srila Rupa Goswami skipped over. He went from sadhana. He didn't bother getting into things like ruchi and asakti and nishta. He just jumped sadhana, which goes all the way up to bhava. And then he goes into bhava and then prema. So there are 3 levels of happiness. There is the different qualities of devotional service in sadhana bhakti. One is subhada, and the other is klesha agni. So subhada means all auspicious. And one aspect of being all auspicious is it gives one happiness greater than sense gratification, which is pretty inconceivable for a conditioned soul, that there can be any happiness greater than sense gratification. But sadhana bhakti offers that opportunity to experience something which is greater than sense gratification. As also it's attractive to everyone, gives one all good qualities, or at least gives good qualities. And Prabhupada gives the example that a devotee, they're automatically a vegetarian and nonviolent. But a person who's a vegetarian or a vegan nowadays is not necessarily nonviolent. Or a vegetarian. Or one who's a vegetarian and nonviolent is not necessarily a devotee, but a devotee is automatically a vegetarian and nonviolent. So it gives one good qualities, it's auspicious for everyone, attracts everyone, and it gives a higher pleasure than sense gratification. Now we can see many devotees come to the movement, and many devotees go out the movement. I don't know, here in Slovenia, I remember when I first joined the movement, when I moved into the temple at the beginning of 1969, then Trivika Maharaj was there. He was, and there wasn't very much, the temple was quite small, and so we were living, Sri Vikramaraj and myself were sleeping downstairs in the temple room, which was enough, big enough to hold both of us. And I turned to him and I said, isn't it nice we're here? This is February, no, actually January 1969, or 68, the end of 68, probably the end of 68, I think. You know, it was actually sometime in the end of 68. And I said, isn't it great that we're here? He said, well, a lot of people came, a lot of people went already. That was in the end of 68. And the first Vyas Puja book, which is in 69, the total number of devotees around the world was 50 in the Vyas Puja. So, as they say, a lot of water has gone out under the bridge since then. So a lot of devotees, they come and they go. Why do they go? Because they don't get any higher taste. Why don't they get a higher taste? Because they never really learn what the science of Krishna consciousness is. They only take it to some degree. That's called Kanista Adhikari. Because devotional service, even at the neophyte level, offers benedictions, but they're material benedictions. Now they may not seem material, but they are material. The most obvious material benediction is Klesha Agni. It relieves one from material distress. Now, we're always under distress, but we don't know we're under distress, so if we give a little bit out of distress, we think we've made enormous progress. We don't realize that in the background, we're always in anxiety. Whereas Prabhupada was walking one time with Giriraj Maharaj, and Prabhupada said some philosophical point, and Giriraj Maharaj said, oh, thank you, Prabhupada. Now I've understood. Before that, I was in illusion. Prabhupada looked at him and said, you're an illusion. You're always an illusion. I think we've gotten out of illusion. We get a little bit out of illusion, but the nature of conditioned life is we're an illusion. But it frees one to some degree, Klesha Agni, from distress. And as one goes on, it frees one more and more. And at the same time, so that's called artha. That artha, arti, one who's in distress. Lamenting. If we ever lamenting, that means we're in distress. And those who are in distress, they're called shudras. They're always ready to cry. The internet is full of people crying. You don't see the tears, but they're always complaining. Or fighting, which is the same thing. You're a rascal, I gotta get rid of you. Your ideas are all nonsense. I'm the truth, the way and the light. No one gets to Krishna except through me. Surrender to me. So lamenting, and then when one stops lamenting, then one wants just a little peace. Some nice prasadam, nice place to sleep. Maybe some nice atmosphere, there's not so much noise, no one bothering you. So then one wants artha, economic development, some peace in this world, some material happiness and pleasure. And if one gets tired of that, then one wants knowledge. One wants to know how to become the artists. They're crying because they don't realize why they're crying. They're crying because they can't be the controller. They're trying so hard, have illicit sex, take intoxication, kill animals. In the past, they've tried so hard to get pleasure from these things and to speculate, and they couldn't do it, so now they're lamenting because they're suffering because of it. They try to control the material nature, and the material nature simply slapped them, so now they're suffering. So when they stop trying to control the material nature, especially in those gross ways, then gradually their suffering ends. Or diminishes. And then they want happiness, because actually that's what we really want is happiness. So happiness in the material world, first we're trying to stop just the misery, and then we want to get things that we'll think will make us happy. And ultimately when one gets some knowledge, he knows nice prasadam, nice relationships, nice atmosphere, peaceful life, that will make one happy. And then when one advances still further, one learns that there's even higher states of that happiness. But that requires knowledge. Controlling the senses will give one not only what one wants, but one can get rid of what he doesn't want. So that's called jignasu. Learn from the learned Brahmins how to get what we want and how to avoid what we don't want. One becomes jignasu. And then finally the Brahmins, they know the material world, it's a miserable place, and that one should avoid unrestricted sense gratification. Instead, one should concentrate on Brahman. They know that, and they teach how to do that. But those are all within the realm of the material existence. Because even Brahman realization, because this whole material universe is just a manifestation of Brahman anyhow. Material means simply the absence of Krishna. Anything without Krishna, Krishna personally, either in his form as Paramatma or in his form as Bhagavan, is different levels of Maya. If one doesn't know that one is Krishna's eternal servant, then one is under the illusory energy. Abhishuddha Buddhaya, one's intelligence is still unclear. Because it's one thing to know who we're not, that we're not this body. The other thing is to know who we actually are. Dasa, dasa, anudasa. To actually realize that we're the servants of Krishna's servants. So in the beginning, we advance towards Klesha Agni. That is, we get rid of avidya, principally. And then that means that we stop, if we actually get rid of avidya, then we stop sinful activities, papam, sinful desires go away. Then if we stop parabdha and karma, we stop doing sinful activities, the tendency for sin goes away, and then gradually we become purified in that way. So that's a higher taste, just going through that process. It's called tushanti. In Bhagavad Gita, satisfaction that we're actually making progress, that we're getting free from misery, or we're learning how to live in the material world more comfortably. More comfortably means that we stop all these unnecessary things that are disturbing us. All this accumulation of useless things that were just bothering us because we think we own them, that we don't really even need. But we're always worried about losing them, although it would make any difference even if we lost them. But still, we're identified with them. So, after Klesha Agni and after Subhada, then the next level is Moksha Lagu Krit and Sudurlava for Bhava Bhakti. So that's the higher level. Moksha Lagu Krit, that the happiness is so great when one obtains bhava that even the conception of happiness, the happiness in Brahman, becomes insignificant. Or as Prahlad Maharaj said, if the happiness in devotional service were multiplied 100 billion times, 100 trillion times to be more exact, it wouldn't equal to an atomic fraction in one drop in the ocean of devotional service. Everyone got that? So the happiness of devotional service, or the happiness of Brahman realization, which we can't even conceive of, being free from all anxiety, realizing that we're eternal, if that happiness was multiplied 100 trillion times, you know, 100 trillion is? It's more than one. Then it wouldn't equal to an atomic fraction in one drop in the ocean of devotional service. Can you conceive of that? Everything, actually, that's good because we think everything was with, the whole reality is within the palm of my hand. We have no idea what reality is, but we're imagining. So that's Moksha Lagu Krit. That it's the happiness of Krishna consciousness is that lagu krit means that it's very light. It's more or less useless. Not even, mentionable if one actually contains Bhava Bhakti. And Bhava Bhakti is only one drop, is one ray in the sunlight of prema. So, Sundarananda Vishat Atma, the happiness is so intense in pure devotional, in prema bhakti, that one does not even know that there's such a thing as material existence. He's not even aware that there's anything material anymore. There's any forgetfulness of Krishna. He sees everyone else as being fully absorbed in separation from Krishna. He thinks everyone else is a devotee except for him. So I don't know, I can't explain it. But that's what it says it's all about. In any case, we have to understand that as long as we're conditioned by these desires for freedom from distress, wanting to be comfortable, wanting to understand things better so we can live more prosperous lives spiritually and materially in this world, and trying to get free from all misconceptions and take shelter in our eternal identity, then we're conditioned in a conditioned life. But as we act on the spiritual platform, at least try, Ishvare tadadine shu, felicetsu dvitsatsu cha, prema maitri kripopeka, yak karoti samadhyamaha. As we try to love Krishna, that is, look at Krishna not with a shopping list. If you're God, then please reveal yourself. Or as I said, we should look at our bead bag like an Aladdin's lamp. And we're rubbing the beads, you know. Dear Lord, give me a house, give me a wife, give me a color TV. Om Jai Jagadisha Hari. So that's not, hey, oh, Krishna, help me. And we should see the devotees as objects of helping us advance in devotional service and objects of service. Advancement in devotional service means service. Now, there are different kinds of service, but we have to develop a service attitude not only towards Krishna, but also as we develop our relation with Krishna, also develop our relation with everything and everyone who's related to Krishna, especially the devotees. So the devotees see Krishna as the object of love, and he sees the devotees as representatives of Krishna, expansions of Krishna. And for the innocent, he sees them as objects of kripa, or bestowing Krishna, the mercy of Krishna consciousness upon them. And for the atheistic, upeksha, try to avoid their unwanted association. So even if we're desirous, akama sapakama va moksha kama udharati, even if we have so many desires, but as we practice Krishna consciousness and having our desires regulated, parama karuna paudvijana nityaya gora chandra sava avatara sarashiramani kevala anandakanda bhaja bhaja bhai chaitanya nitai sudrida vishvasikori Vishaya charya se rasa maijiya uke bolo hari hari. So we can't give up sense gratification all at once, but we can regulate it. Don't eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. One who's temperate in his habits of eating, sleeping, working, recreation can mitigate the material pains by practice of the yoga system. And at the same time, try to develop a sense of Krishna consciousness so that eventually we're able to actually see things in relation to Krishna. That when we look at something or someone, we don't remember our previous desires. Because everything we look at will remind us of something. Just like if you're walking down the street, of course, usually previously people could tell. The first thing we notice was whether it was a man or a woman. Now it's hard to tell sometimes. Can only guess. And if you get it wrong, you might feel insulted. In any case, everything we look at, everything we taste, everything we experience reminds us of something. Now the trick is to do things in such a way as that everything we look at and taste and smell and hear reminds us of Krishna. Then we'll become Krishna conscious. If we look at something and it doesn't remind us of Krishna, then we're in Maya. That means that we utilize that object in the past for our sense gratification. Maybe one time, or maybe trillions of times, we've utilized that object or a similar object for sense gratification. And therefore, every time we look at it or experience it, remember a whole lot of past avidya that's connected with it. It's all combined together as papa, aparabdha and parabdha karma, and kuta. It's all intensely, well, it's all stored up within our heart. But if we utilize that same object and try to utilize it in Krishna service, according to the authorized, to the representatives of Krishna as authorized, then the result is that we'll remember Krishna as we're utilizing it. If we accept everything belongs to Krishna, we follow Krishna's representatives, their instructions, in order to please Krishna, then the result is that we'll remember Krishna, and we remember Krishna, then our association with that object, since time immemorial, that we've been utilizing for sense gratification, will actually help remind us of Krishna. So that's why household life is valuable for those who are attached, because it's an opportunity for the husband and wife to work together, have some level of sense gratification, produce children, and at the same time try to see each other in relationship to Krishna as objects of service to please Krishna. And therefore all these relationships between man and women, they become spiritualized. And then one becomes liberated, as we can go over in the third canto, Kapila Deva's instructions to Devahuti. So household life can be very valuable if it's properly utilized. Otherwise, it brings one to the lowest point of existence, or it can help one become liberated, and so one can become eligible to actually become a real vanaprastha. That is, vanaprastha means that one is actually satisfied, and one can actually live anywhere, including in a forest, and think about Krishna. And as that intensifies, then one comes to the platform of sannyas, where one no longer is attracted to the material energy, one is only attracted to thinking about Krishna. Now, of course, we give householders in our society, generally many of them are not trained. The brahmacharis aren't trained, the householders aren't trained. We have hardly any vanaprasthas. And even the sannyasis, if they didn't have very much training as a brahmachari or as a grihastha, it's very unlikely they're going to make sannyas is going to help them very much in actually becoming very Krishna conscious. They may not have the required experience to actually become fixed in the goal of life, namely to see everyone and everything in relation to Krishna, to utilize everything and everything in relation to Krishna. If we utilize, that's why the Sankirtan movement in this age is so valuable. Because in previous ages, there was only two classes of people, practically speaking, the demons and the devotees. And the devotees, they didn't get involved with the demons because it was a waste of time. They were really fixed demons. To be a demon in the previous ages, you had to be really sincere to be a demon. You had to really, want to be independent of Krishna. And to be a devotee, you really had to be a devotee, or else you became a demon quite easily. Because even in Dwarpa Yuga, if you had a wrong thought, you get the reaction for it. Imagine that. Even we wouldn't last 10 minutes. You'd come into the temple room, there would just be piles of ashes everywhere. But there's innocent people. So we can, if we look at innocent people and we're not compassionate, we're not trying to figure out how to help them become Krishna conscious, then we're an illusion. We're in the material concept of life. Because we're not seeing them in relation to Krishna. Or if we see them in relation with Krishna, we think, well, tough luck, you know, you're a demon. But they may not be a demon. Most people are just innocent. They just don't, because no one's told them about Krishna in the right way. And therefore, they don't understand. But if they're approached in the right way, they would become receptive. Many of them, at least. And unless we get to ignore the atheistic people, understanding that it's beyond our capacity to help them become Krishna conscious, if we associate with them because we like their association, well, that's not going to help us advance in devotional service very much. So we have an opportunity to get a distaste or a detachment from association with unwanted things. Like nowadays, there's so much unwanted things. If you go on the internet, you can get involved a whole day in so many unwanted things. Even the devotees. You know, you go on the internet, you type in the Hare Krishna ISKCON, the Hare Krishna movement. Anyone who reads all that stuff, they'd probably bloop. What a joy, my God. The demons are better than them. So we have to avoid unwanted association. At the same time, we have to have plans to actually help the innocent. The enthusiasm that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will give if we're actually serious about spreading Krishna consciousness and the advancement is what will bring us to the perfection and learn how to associate with the devotees. Because unless we're associating with the devotees to help them to develop Krishna consciousness and to help the innocent become Krishna conscious, then our devotional service is going to be not very developed. And we won't be able to love Krishna selflessly because we won't get the ecstasy that comes from serving the devotees and helping the innocent. That's where the mercy comes from. And therefore we won't actually experience the ecstasy and the love for Krishna, prema. If we just try to love Krishna, but we don't try to love his servants, then Krishna will not accept that. One who's my devotee, one claims to be my devotee is actually not my devotee. One who claims to be the devotee of my devotee, he's actually my devotee. So it's by serving the higher authorities, especially our acharyas, who teach us how to serve all the other devotees and serve the innocent and avoid the atheistic and to love Krishna, by serving these acharyas, then we actually make progress in devotional service. But if we only serve them incompletely, we don't learn from them how to avoid the atheists and how to help the innocent and live in cooperation with the devotees, our love for Krishna will simply be an idea, but it won't actually develop very much. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
When we examine ourselves and there are some inappropriate motives and desires, were they there before and we didn't notice them, or maybe they came about by our inappropriate practice, by our offenses? How can we...
Well, we've been doing offenses since time immemorial. We've been quite practiced in offense. It's not that we suddenly came to the Hare Krishna movement and we became offensive in the association of devotees. Before that, we were quite pure. It's like saying when you go out on the street and you're distributing a book and you meet someone and you try, excuse me, sir, and then you go, why are you agitating my mind? As if they were completely peaceful and they were before you approach them, they were just thinking of God and going back to the spiritual world. You stopped them and you agitated their mind. No, we're primed to commit offenses. But only when we come in contact with the devotees we even know that there's such a thing as an offense. So activities performed in knowledge strengthen one's advance. When one can see things as they are, this is Bhagavad Gita 14:19. One who is able to see things as they are, then the influence of the material nature gradually ceases. So if we find out we're doing something wrong, and we take a positive vision of that, positive determination, we're in a positive mood, then it'll go away. And if we start lamenting that, why did I find this out, you know, maybe I'll go away, but I want this. I think I'm justified having it. We have the wrong attitude after finding it out, then it'll stay there. And Krishna will have to really smash us as far as to get rid of it. If we start justifying our anarthas, then we're in real trouble. But Krishna gives us the intelligence to find out what they are, and then we won't give them up. Then Krishna really has to smack us a few times. Convince us to give it up. So he's very kind when he reveals these things because he's the Paramatma. But we have to become determined to also reciprocate with him and try at least to give them up. Try to get the higher attitude, higher understanding, Krishna conscious understanding. Anything else?
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada repeats not once that Krishna consciousness is simple and natural because we can think of Krishna even when we drink water, rasoham apsu kaunteya. But in fact, teaching Bhakti Shastri for 20 plus years, I'm giving this exercise regularly, remember Krishna well as you drink water. And I myself don't remember Krishna as the taste of water when I drink water. And all the other, you know, like the sun of the light of the sun, or the clouds in the universal form and something. It's Krishna himself says, you remember me as smaller than the smallest, that's how you meditate and remember me. And neither the students feel inspired to practice this all over the world, anywhere in the world. Nor am I myself frequently remembering, except that's the day when I gave this exercise.
Well, out of 365 days of the year, at least for a couple of minutes of use.
But if I give an exercise connected to japa, or something connected to devotees, or something connected to kirtan, then usually it gets a surprising turnout and people tend to practice this. So it seems that in the Gita, Krishna gives a lot of attention to this, and Srila Prabhupada repeats this, but it doesn't seem so simple to remember Krishna when I drink water.
Well, it will become simpler when we become Krishna conscious. But as far as practicing that, in this age, the only Harinama, Eva Kevala, without coming to at least the level of anartha nivritti, then, you know, we won't be able to remember so easily Krishna. But generally speaking, when we're utilizing objects in Krishna's service, then we're getting free from a lot of our misconceptions. So devotional service is not only just remembering Krishna, but also trying to forget our past misuse of Krishna's property. And as we become purified by utilizing Krishna's property properly, then gradually it will become easier to remember Krishna. What to speak of that he's the taste of water, even to remember to chant Hare Krishna. So that will become easier in the course of time. It's like the same thing, if you put the iron in the fire, then the whole iron uniformly gets hotter and hotter and hotter. Then it becomes gradually like fire. So as we actually advance in Krishna consciousness, these things will become easier. First of all, what to speak of water, we should also remember that devotees are also expansions of Krishna, things like that. So our dealings become a little bit more spiritual. Because as long as we're offending the devotees, we're not properly reciprocating with them or honoring them, then there's no question Krishna is the taste of water. It won't help us very much. When we're in hell, we'll remember, oh, Krishna is the taste of water. We'll get a lot of warm water in hell remembering Krishna. So the other problem is that our Sankirtan movement is diminished greatly. So even though we're more scholarly nowadays, we have a lot more information, there's a lot more classes and things like that. People, you know, they pass the Bhakti Shastri test, they get their Bhakti Vaibhava test, Bhakti Vedanta, whatever. They become scholars. But they're still not inspired for the Sankirtan movement to actually spread Krishna consciousness. It's like, you know, devotional service has become an intellectual exercise. So that will not be without, that's helpful, but we have to get the Siddhanta also. And part of the Siddhanta is go out and spread Krishna consciousness and cooperate with the devotees. Stop, you know, love the devotees, because if we don't love the devotees, we'll naturally be offending them. And there's a lot of, you know, just general misconceptions in our movement that have to be eliminated. It's not just individually, but there's just general misconceptions that impedes everyone's devotional service. So even if, you know, we're having a day of honoring water, and everyone, you know, spent the whole day drinking water, chanting Hare Krishna, remembering Krishna, it wouldn't help us very much anyhow, without getting past the major misconceptions that we're faced with. And that will only happen when we actually realize how we have to cooperate with each other to spread Krishna consciousness and to serve each other and to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Otherwise, we're just going to be dull. We won't remember that we're Krishna's servant. What to speak of anyone else? Is that right? Anything else? Yes.
Krishna consciousness and sex desire go ill together. Well, you were mentioning Sankirtan, but sometimes even after, for example, during marathon, in intense Sankirtan, which we were doing, I mean, somehow, even you don't meditate on those things, you're not intentionally in contact with object of sex desire, but still things seems to be quite persistent, which in, for example, sometimes you're opening eyes during the night and out of nowhere comes the desire. So how to deal with that if, I mean, in the time of ignorance, or if you can explain the phenomena or somehow.
Well, pick up a dream, pick up some dream japa beads and start chanting in your dream. No, I mean, how to deal with it? Generally speaking, we try to deal with things when we're awake.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. But still, when I open, so there is no Krishna at night. I open my eyes. No, where is woman? No Krishna. No, as if I never did have done nothing Krishna conscious in my life after.
Well, that's called Maya.
Yeah.
we're just expecting that we think we're on some platform, which is, you know, just, which is unreasonable, unrealistic, that's all. We imagine that, you know, here I am on the mat, whatever it is, I'm so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, I'm in ecstasy, that I must be a pure devotee now. I must be on the Madhyama Anakari platform. You know, these things shouldn't be there. And then they come, and we say, well, I wonder where you came from. Well, it came from because we're still attached. We have no idea what reality is. It's called utsahamayi, puffed up with enthusiasm. We get puffed up with enthusiasm, the beginning of Bhajana Kriya. And then we realize after some time, Gana Tarala, when I'm actually absorbed in some sadhana or even preaching, then I'm in ecstasy. I'm in, you know, more ecstatic than I was before. But as soon as we stop, then at once, you know, we're up here, and we're subject to crashing. You know, Maya, you know, we're there, everyone, we're looking, you know, who can take a book, and then it's time to go home, and we look around and see, you know, who out, you know, hey, she looks pretty good. And Maya says, yeah, you deserve a break. Time off. Time out. So gradually we'll have to apply Krishna consciousness, even when we're not, you know, have some intense sadhana. That might take some time. That's described in Madhurya Kandambini, that when we're intensely absorbed in devotional service, it's like there Krishna consciousness is manifested. But then, you know, we have a whole other realm of activities outside that sadhana or devotional service. And there we're in illusion most of the time. So we have to expand that little core and develop it so it expands into our normal life, what we consider our normal life. And even at the stage of nishtha, it's half and half. Even at the stage of liberation, it's not. These things are not complete. They really, but then it starts really picking up after nishtha, because then when it's really concentrating on Krishna, and ruchi, asakti, then, you know, at the stage of bhava, there's still these ideas, but they're like a dream. They're considered like a shadow. But before that, sometimes, even at sakti, momentarily our mind will diverge. And what to speak of ruchi, where everything is tasteful, but still there may be some attraction, then we have to bring it back under the control of the self again. So practice. We're practicing. That's what Krishna says. What does he say? Shunai shunaro paramat buddhya drita grihitaya atma samstamana kritva na kinchit api chintaya. Gradually, step by step, with full conviction, one should become situated in trance by means of intelligence, sustained with full conviction, and thus the mind should think of the self alone and nothing else. Wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one should withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. So when we see our minds wandering, or, you know, we're deviating from we shouldn't think, oh my God, devotional service doesn't work. I'm such a nice devotee. You know, how could this happen to me? It must be something wrong with Krishna. Maybe he's asleep. It's not even Chaturmasya. Maybe someone should wake him up. No, we should understand that that's going to happen all the time. But our victory is to bring it back sometimes, under Krishna's control. And sometimes we have more opportunities than others, like a marathon. But we shouldn't think that, you know, now I'm focused, and therefore I'm going to be focused forever, no matter what I do. No, if we're really that determined, then we'll be careful. Whether we're on book distribution or anywhere, but we're usually not so careful. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Shrimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.